Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
WGN with our friend Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Our All Things COVID segment. Well, all the talk this week, Kev, has been to mask or not to mask. Governor Pritzker has come out and said that shortly he will be removing the Illinois mask mandate. Do you think we are at that point, I guess, is my first question for you. Hello.
Hello, Dean. Yeah, you know, if the numbers continue to go down, and they're dropping, but not dropping as fast as they had in the past few weeks, we probably are getting to a point, because I think people are getting so kind of tired and upset about this, and they see these numbers decreasing and hospitalizations decreasing and want to get back to some sense of normalcy as we hopefully start to see the weather improve and spend more time outdoors.
So, I mean, it's a question of whether or not medically it's the right thing to do to protect yourselves and to protect the people around you, to prevent giving or getting the virus from somebody else versus, oh, I'm so tired of this. Which would you say is greater importance? I mean, I'm sick and tired of it too, but I'm for whatever is going to keep us safest and end this, ultimately right. End this, not temporarily end this.
Right. And A more than B, certainly. You know, we should follow the science and follow what's going on out there. And, you know, certainly a lot of people were encouraged by what the governor said, but then hopefully they also heard, you know, about what the CDC came out with and talked about boosters and the ability for them to protect us starts to wane after 4 months. So are we going to be hitting a sweet spot again where immunity for those who have been boosted wanes and now we take off masks and have more interactions? Are we going to see another blip here? So that's the concern in the medical community, certainly. But at least it's been encouraging that those who have been vaccinated and boosted are starting to decrease the strain that's been put on the health systems.
Are we seeing any more variants, anything in the distance, something in another country, anything?
Yeah, you know, we are seeing the variants, the subvariant of Omicron, certainly in Denmark, where it is just, you know, taken over the entire country. So now the biggest concern is are we going to see spread of that? We've seen it here. You know, we Northwestern identified a few cases here in Illinois, but we haven't seen a huge bump up of that as Omicron still continues to predominate. So it's going to be a matter of how well we're protected and whether this subvariant makes a big blip, obviously, like Omicron did. In Denmark, you know, their vaccination rates were not stellar by any means, and so it wasn't surprising that the subvariant took over there.
What's the status of vaccines for kids right now? What's going on with that?
Yeah, Dean, if you remember last week, you kind of talked about it and kind of feel like I don't want to say I predicted, but I think many of us thought the exact same thing that happened this week. You know, the Pfizer data for kids ages between 2 and 4 after 2 vaccines was not great, and yet they were still going to go in front of the FDA on the 15th, on Tuesday. And the FDA took a step back and said, you know what, no, we're not going to rush this. We are going to wait until we get that data from the third dose, which won't be until April, before they go and push for EUA on that, which I think is good. I think you had so much uncertainty with parents, and if you put out data that wasn't great and didn't show things, you'd have even more uncertainty. So I think this was one of those missteps where they got a little bit ahead of themselves and then realized, boy, we better be really careful and make sure we have really good data to show that this is protective, because you already have, you know, a third of parents waiting for it, a third that are kind of hesitant, and a third that say they're not getting it. So let's make sure we get the right data and the correct data in their hands.
On the subject of boosters that you talked about, the story that came out this week that the booster shot that many of us have already have gotten only is good for about 4 months. Are we looking at an additional booster shot somewhere along the way?
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me now. You know, if we start to see a little bump up in hospitalizations, that they may make that recommendation. Certainly, they'll make the recommendations for those that are immunocompromised or have other comorbidities. I think you'll see that come out very soon. But whether it's going to go out to the entire general public will be interesting, because if remember, we talked about 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know, both Pfizer and Moderna are working on an Omicron-specific vaccine. So instead of getting a booster of the original, will the recommendation be to get a new vaccine, which is directly looking at the Omicron variant?
That ties in with a question that was texted in. Dr. Most, it's been 4 months since my husband and I had our booster shots. We're seniors. One has type 2 diabetes. Should we start taking more precautions? I mean, that really kind of ties in with exactly with what you just said, I think, right?
Yep, it absolutely does. You know, we were really hoping for much longer protection with that third dose, which we see with a lot of other vaccines. You know, when you get that boosted dose after a certain period of time, now the body just does really well. Well, unfortunately, with this one, it appears that it's starting to wane. And again, we have to remember that the vaccine that we're getting was made for the original coronavirus, the original COVID-19. And now after Delta and Omicron, you know, we're going to have to realize that the vaccine is not as accurate against the variants and the subvariants as it would have been if we never had any mutations and we're still fighting the original virus.
Yeah, this seems to be the question of the day. Paulette, you're on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Yes, thank you. I had received my booster at the end of August. I'm 69 years old, and I'm high risk on 4 counts. And I'm concerned about not really getting clear, definitive information from the CDC as to whether or not, I mean, the common sense tells me it's got to be waning 6 months later, especially with these new variants coming along. And I didn't know if you, I know Israel has done that with seniors and high-risk individuals, and I just don't know if you've heard anything blowing in the wind on that definitively.
Yeah, Paulette, you're spot on. You know, we often have been looking to Israel on this case. And what Israel did is they took everybody, not even with with comorbidities, they just took all seniors and said, we're going to give that fourth dose. And it appears
That's
to
right.
have given protection to them. So now the step with us would be, okay, do we roll it out? Like I said, I think you're going to see that, especially someone like you who has 4 comorbidities, as I understand what you said. You know, mm-hmm. that would be an individual that I would be talking to my doctor now saying, hey, I'm 6 months out.
That's CDC what I was thinking, too. Said, I should bring it up with my doctor as well. I'm so glad you brought that up.
100%.
All right. Good.
Yep. Okay.
Good luck to
we're
you,
on the same. We're on the same page, and I really appreciate you taking my call. I've been getting very nervous and stressed out about this for some time now. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, and good luck to you and your family with all of that. A quick break, and we'll return to Dr. Kevin Most in just a moment. And Kev, I'm allowed to ask a non-COVID question during this segment as well, correct?
Absolutely. It's one of the great things about having a medical degree is that we've been taught to treat more than COVID.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like it the last 2 years, but there are other things going on. But something that has just fascinated me since the cause of death was announced for Bob Saget of brain trauma. I wanted to learn more about that and, you know, find out how something like that happens and how it could kill somebody the way that it did comedian Bob Saget. That and your questions for Dr. Kevin Most, 312-981-7200, next. WGN 947, Dean Richards Sunday morning. Everything COVID and more with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. So the news came out this week of the death of comedian, actor Bob Saget in what appeared to be a significant blow to the head, one that fractured his skull in several places, causing bleeding across both sides of the brain, according to an autopsy report that was released on a Friday. Not only blunt force to the head, but multiple fractures in the skull as well. Kev, is this something that we see, you know, often, once in a while? You know, heaven knows we've all bumped our heads. And, you know, are we in danger? This sounds like it was something pretty traumatic.
Yeah, Dean, it really does. You know, initially when you heard it, at least initially when I heard it, it sounded like, okay, bumped his head bad, went to sleep, didn't wake up. But now when you're starting to hear more about it, where he had multiple skull fractures, this was not he hit his head on the headboard. I mean, I think he might have slipped in a shower, he had to have hit pretty hard to fracture the skull. Now, fractured skull does not mean that you're going to die, but certainly it is going to increase our awareness. And, you know, I don't know anything else about his health. Was he on any blood thinners? Did he take aspirin, or was he on, you know, blood thinners for other reasons? That is probably our biggest concern. Mainly because when you start to get bleeding in the brain, that is an emergency that needs to either be evacuated and stop the bleeding so that it doesn't put pressure to shift the brain to a point where it stops you from breathing.
If he had been on blood thinners, that would have created a faster bleed in the brain. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, 100%. You know, once we injure a vein or artery, the body says, okay, we have damage to our vascular system, and now it's time to stop that, whatever we can do naturally. That's why we have things called platelets. People have probably heard about that. Fibrinogen, fibrin, those are things that are circulating in the blood system that don't go to work until they see that there is trauma. And then there they go and they try to stop the bleeding as much as they possibly can. So for someone who's on blood thinner, it's taught to not do that. The platelets don't clump. So we try to make sure that we can keep our blood flowing. Great for people with heart issues and with other issues that can cause stroke. So for him, he must have had a very substantial hit. Now, he could have been dazed and confused and just said, you know, I'm just going to go lay down. You know, the autopsy also showed there was no blood or alcohol. So it wasn't like he was in an impaired state of mind. But as anybody knows, after a blow to the head, you can be dazed for a minute or two. You can really look around and go, wow. You know, so this is beyond a simple concussion where there's no fracture. The brain is just shook, you know, essentially in the cage. This was much more traumatic.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I told the story on the air how I was crossing Michigan Avenue, going to Water Tower Place to buy a book, and tripped in a pothole that was on the street. I didn't see it. I went down flat on my face, trying to protect myself with the fall. I put my arms in front of me and actually fractured my wrist at the same time. But my head took a pretty hard hit on the cement on the sidewalk. And I saw stars. I was dazed and confused for a few minutes. Fortunately, some good Samaritans came by and helped an old man out of the pothole, out of the street, and helped me. But I was a little bit out of it for a little while. Now, it sounds like, from what you're saying, that I could have had something like that then, which may explain my behavior now, by the way.
That is a start, yeah. The skull is pretty amazing when you look at it. You look at our cheekbones, and then the bones right above our eyes are very, very strong. And that is survival of the fittest, Darwinism at its finest, right? That is going to protect our eye socket as much as it can. The back of our head also is thick because of individuals who fall and hit their heads. So the skull is very protective of the brain. But once you fracture that, if the force is enough to fracture it, it certainly has enough to tear into blood vessels. And that's exactly what happened here. So, you know, we always tell people, you know, that have a specific or a significant fall, you know, we want to wake people up every couple hours, make sure they're not confused. So if you go to the emergency room and everything checks out and the CAT scan or x-rays are fine, you know, you still may hear from the doctor, okay, I want you to wake them up every 2 hours, ask them simple questions or her simple questions, you know, where are we, what's your birthday, things like that. If there's any confusion, we get them right in and rescan them. So certainly, head contusions can be difficult when there's no fracture, but certainly when there's a fracture, we take it much more seriously. So, unfortunately, I wish, you know, Mr. Saget would have, you know, presented to the emergency room, and we might be in a different place.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you know, people, this my first reaction when I fell and was, you know, like kind of loopy for a little while. The people stayed with me until I got up on my feet. And, of course, you know, the macho kicks in at some point. It's like, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I can get up and go. And, yeah. You know, it turns out I was bleeding all over my face when I went to make my purchase of the book that I was going to buy. I didn't find out till afterwards. But the point is don't do the macho act. Something like that happens, go get some help, because there could be something going on inside that you don't know about that could result in something terrible.
Absolutely. And one, you know, getting checked out is one thing, but then also hearing the recommendations of what to do for follow-up. You know, we don't give strong pain medication. We want to know if the pain is getting worse. We tell people, you know, we don't like when people throw up for no reason. So, you know, is that putting pressure? Is there bleeding? Because these can be treated. Neurosurgeons can go in and evacuate that blood, take the pressure off the brain, and really it heals itself, essentially. We don't do anything with skull fractures. They heal themselves for the most part. It's one of those conditions where if you see somebody and it happens like that, certainly getting them checked out is very appropriate, at least to get the reassurance that everything is okay, and then also to know what the signs to look for over the next 6, 10, 12 hours.
This is Kathy on the phone line at 312-981-7200. You're on with Dr. Kevin Most.
Hi, Dean, and good morning, Dr. Most. I'm a teacher in the western suburbs, and our district is removing its mask mandate as of Thursday. And as a teacher, it's my job to keep my students as well as myself safe. So my question for Dr. Most is, what's the best way to do this within an enclosed classroom with 20 or more unmasked and possibly unvaccinated students?
Yeah, Kathy, first, thank you. You know, teachers and nurses are two of my big favorites here, so I appreciate everything you do, especially the western suburbs where I live and where I was educated, so thank you. You bring up a couple of good points, and depending what age you're teaching, you know, you have kids mm-hmm. that don't even have access to a vaccine potentially. So the number of vaccinated kids is unfortunately way too low, and now you've taken this environment and have said to kids, well, you don't have to be vaccinated, so now there's the peer pressure. So certainly as a mm-hmm. teacher, I think you're going to try to do everything you can. Make sure we have enough stuff to wash kids' hands with, make sure that we distance them as much as possible, and make sure that you're fully vaccinated and boosted. I mean, I think those are probably the big things right now, mm-hmm. because unfortunately this has gotten to be a kind of a political family mess, and we should still be looking at how we can protect these kids until we can get them fully vaccinated.
How are the rest of the teachers feeling, Kathy?
It's an anxiety-filled pool of helplessness. Mm. Yeah, it's tricky right now. So yeah. I appreciate your words, and we'll keep doing what we're doing. But our hands are tied, and we just hope people can do the right thing.
I think I would feel the same way if I were in your shoes or the other teachers out there. Kathy, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. And Kevin, thank you, as always, for all of the terrific advice that you give us. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Have a great Sunday, Kev. Thank you.
Take care, Dean. We'll talk soon.